What did Kathy's mother see in that bright light that night behind her house? What manifestation of another dimension, another world, left such a tangible mark in our natural environment in Kathy's backyard? Did Kathy's sister Laura really see a UFO? In the book Intruders by Bud Hopkins, we continue our story of the event at Copley Woods just to give you a little flair, a little taste, a little modicum of understanding of these cases. Kathy's letter continued bringing up an event that in this context was particularly interesting. About 10 years or so later, she wrote, Laura went to get hypnotized to lose weight. And while her girlfriend who went with her did great, she experienced some quite terrifying experiences. The first night she came home after the hypnosis, shortly after she went to bed, she woke up and she couldn't talk or hear. She also seemed to suffer some type of temporary distortion of her vision. Her husband took her to the emergency room and they gave her tranquilizers and sent her home. This was around 1975. This went on, gradually getting better. She noticed that she was doing the exact opposite of what the hypnotist had suggested. He told her that potato chips and candy were fat slices. I guess so it would gross her out, or her subconscious would have a distaste for it, and she wouldn't want to eat them. But instead, every time she ate them, she felt markedly better. And when she called the hypnotist to ask him what the heck was happening to her, and could he fix it, the moment she heard his voice, she became violent and wanted to kill him. Kathy writes, you have to know Laura. She's very much not like this at all. Very common sense, down to earth, easygoing. He suggested she had some sort of block and that it would probably be best if she didn't see him anymore, to go to someone else. The effects gradually wore off, but she was left with one strong thought that by the year 2000, the world would be totally different than we know it. It would only be for the young and the strong, a thought she could not escape that dominated her thinking. Dr. Hopkins writes, having finished her account of the mysterious backyard lights, the marks on the ground, and her recollection of her sister's UFO experience, Kathy added a final cryptic paragraph. My mother and I have had a couple of unusual experiences, mine mostly in the form of a vivid dream, and mother and I both have the same scar on our right legs. She said she got hers when she was a girl playing outside. I don't remember when I got mine, but it seems like I had it all my life. They are in the same place and look exactly alike. A nurse once told me it looked like a scar left by a bone marrow test or a pin inserted in my shin bone from a break. At first, I only had one scar, but now I have two on the same leg. I got this one when I was about 13, but I can't for the life of me remember how. I used to play in the woods by the pond a lot, and I may have gotten it there, but I don't remember how. Kathy closed her letter with an address and a phone number. Though I could not anticipate it at the time, her account of two suggestive incidents has expanded into the most complex UFO case I have yet encountered. Usually when I receive letters in response to missing time, they were read and then stacked in a cardboard box to be answered later when time permitted, a batch at a time, so to say. If the tone of the letter sounded urgent and the narrative followed the pattern of symptoms I recognized as suggestive of a buried abduction experience, I often phoned the writer directly. The Kathy case fit this special category. I called her for the first time on September 15th, 1983. A number of phone conversations ensued leading up to arrangements for Kathy to visit New York in the middle of October for an intensified investigation of her experience and a series of hypnotic regressions. During these phone calls, I talked with Kathy, her mother, her father, and her sister Laura. All four speak with a familiar middle American accent. I was born myself in Wheeling, West Virginia, so I know it well. an earthy, candid directness that conveys the habit of honesty. One of my first conversations was with Kathy's father, Robert. I asked him his recollections of the circle and a patch of dead grass which appeared on the lawn behind his house. Her father said, well, quote, I've been working about 10 years on the damn yard out there, and the backyard was the best part of the whole place. I don't know what it did. It's not fungus. I don't know what the devil it is. But something or someone or whatever has wiped out a hunk of my ground. The circle and that line away from it, it is still just like it was. It's been there about 3 months. It hasn't changed at all. The grass just grows up to it and quits. Robert, Mary, Kathy all agree that it took perhaps 3 days for the grass to die completely and then to crumble away to brown powder. The marks were unmistakably clear by the 4th of July when Mary remembered pointing them out to her grandson. Shrubbery near the bird feeder where Mary had first seen the small ball of light began to die also, and as we shall see, there were other odd organic changes in the Davies' backyard. I also asked Kathy's father his opinion of both his daughter's basic truthfulness. Robert and Mary have raised 4 children, 3 girls and a boy, and I have met them all. As I began to know them better, I felt that they were honest and innocent of the need to embellish or invent exotic incidents. Robert was more emphatic. If they never made anything up, I'd whack their butts for them. So they never did. In fact, after talking to other family members, I realized that Kathy had a tendency even to understate the strangeness of the events in the Davis clan. She was less prone to sound the alarm than to try to explain things away, and she only wrote to me when she had photographs to back up her and her mother's account of the peculiar backyard lights and ground traces. At the end of that letter, she had referred almost reluctantly to some vivid dream she had had, and in one of our earliest phone conversations, I asked her about them. The most recent of her dreams, and for her the most unforgettable, occurred in the summer of 1978, when she was 19 years old, newly married, and living with her husband in a small attic apartment in a suburb of Indianapolis. The dream was extraordinarily frightening and realistic. Kathy recalled an experience as vivid now as it had been then. It began, as these dreams often do, in the darkest middle of the night, with Kathy sitting up, awake, facing 2 strange, gray-faced creatures who stood alongside her bed. One of them was holding a small black box with a glistening red light on its top. The man who held the box moved closer and handed it to Kathy. And as he moved, the other figure moved too, in absolute union. Again, I digress, and I submit to you the case of Ezekiel. Read it, and note the unison of movement. Hopkins goes on to recount her story. In an account she wrote later, she described it this way. When they handed me the box, I remember thinking, oh, please, don't come any closer. Just as I wrote that I felt the terror, and I felt it all too real. The feeling, the dream. For just a flash, I thought this could be real. This terror is real. She described the figures as having large heads and skin that was dingy white, grayish. Their eyes were pitch black in color, liquid, shimmering in the dim light. She mentioned that she could not remember seeing hands when the box was passed to her, and that the figures were so close to the bed that she could not see the lower legs or feet. I don't remember if there was a mouth and a nose or ears. I just remember the eyes the best, the general shape. They were between 4 and 5 feet tall, I guess, and slight of build. He called me by my name and seemed to talk to me like I was a child. I don't know why I feel this, but at the time, it didn't bother me. He said, Kathy, and handed me a box, and I said, can I have it? And he said, no, hold it, look at it. I did. Then he took it from me gently after a minute. I said, what is it? What is it for? He said, look at me. Then I thought, do I have to? But I did. He said, when the time is right, you will see it again. You will remember, and you'll know how it used to be and how to use it. Now, I was scared, petrified. But as soon as I heard my name, and when I looked into his face, his eyes, somehow I was able to calm down enough to communicate. I began to feel physically relaxed, almost sleepy again, and quiet mentally. I just kept thinking, just don't come any closer. Just don't touch me and I'll be okay. Oh God, please don't touch me. Don't move closer to me. They never did touch me. And they moved slowly, cautiously. I never saw them leave. I just remember waking up. Kathy said that this dream seemed utterly real. She was in her own bedroom and everything appeared exactly as it normally was, except for the presence of her strange visitors. Her husband was asleep beside her through the entire ordeal, yet she made no effort to alert him. About 3 a.m., the hour of souls, she awoke slowly, as if from an anesthetic, as she put it, and roused her husband to tell him of her bizarre recollection. The following day, she told her mother, as well as her sister Laura. I have since interviewed both women as well as Kathy's ex-husband on this point, and all three recall Kathy's having told them at that time of her frightening dream. All the details she has described predate the publication of Missing Time. I am satisfied that in 1978, she had almost no knowledge of the typical, quote, bedroom visitations, nor of this commonly reported UFO occupant type. Her images and memories cannot be ascribed either to contamination by reading UFO literature or by viewing its Hollywood version as created by Steven Spielberg's special effect department. In the past 7 years, I have investigated literally scores of accounts similar to Kathy's dream recollection, and I am always on the alert for certain symptoms that suggest the dream was not a dream at all, but instead a real event, a partially recalled UFO abduction experience. Though many UFO abductions are remembered normally and apparently in their entirety, the way one might recall a mugging or a frightening accident, some degree of amnesia accompanies the majority of these experiences. We simply do not know whether amnesia in these situations is natural, internally fueled defense against unsettling members, or whether it is an externally imposed phenomenon by which UFO occupants conceal their operations and, as it were, help the abductee to live as normal a life as possible after such an experience. Or is it some combination of both these factors? But if, as I suspect, Kathy's dream was a real event, her conscious recollections were undoubtedly only part of a longer, more complex buried experience. The first thing she remembered was not awakening, but rather being already awake and sitting up in bed. She had only a hazy sense of how the dream ended, so like a number of UFO abduction accounts, her story had a middle but no real beginning or end. I made a mental note that when she came to New York, this would be the first incident that we would explore through hypnosis, the method relied upon to pierce the veil of amnesia. In the time between my receipt of Kathy's original letter and the day of her arrival in New York in mid-October, I was on the phone with at least one member of the Davis family almost every other night. Research may be frustrating from some points of view, but I'm sure it has the full support of the telephone company, he says in jest. Indianapolis, even in the off hours, is a costly connection, and few of our calls were short. Each of the Davis family members' recollections seemed to spark still more accounts of other apparently unconnected and yet unreported incidents. It was as if each person had for years harbored an odd memory or two And until I began asking questions along lines that I knew from past experience could be fruitful, no one assumed that these memories were possibly significant, or for that matter, part of a larger pattern within the UFO phenomenon. When, for example, I began asking the Davis family members about their dreams, especially any frightening recurrent dreams, another previously hidden pattern emerged rather dramatically. Kathy had written to me a second time, enclosing photographs of a similar mysterious scar on her mother's lower leg, and in this letter she complied with my request by describing another dimly remembered dream from her childhood. Me and my mom are hiding in a closet because there's a big thing in the sky, and Mom is real scared. Then suddenly she's pulled from the closet, and I'm terrified that I'll never see her again. I don't understand why we're supposed to be scared of the thing in the sky. We lived on Michigan Street then. We were in my closet. That's it. That's all I can remember, and it's very unclear, but very terrifying. In a later, completely separate interview with Kathy's mother, I asked Mary if she had ever had any recurrent disturbing dreams that remained vividly in her mind over the years. She said that there was one puzzling dream that she had had frequently as a young woman, which was both terrifying and extremely realistic, and which involved her eldest daughter. In this dream, she had hidden in the closet of Laura's room because, quote, two people were in the house who wanted to take my child. This closet, which she dreamed of exactly as it was in reality, had a trapdoor in its ceiling which led to an attic crawl space. In her panic, she opened it and pushed Laura up into the attic to hide her from the nameless threat from the intruders. The dream always ended there, and Mary would then wake up terrified. The similarity between Kathy's and her mother's dream is remarkable, except for one odd but central detail. Kathy places herself in the dream, while Mary remembers that it was Laura being hidden in the attic. This apparent contradiction, which still has not been resolved, can be explained various ways. First, there is the possibility of contamination, that as a small child, Kathy heard her mother's vivid account and applied it to herself rather than to her sister Laura, thereafter remembering the dream, as it were, as her own. That is a possibility. It is also possible that Mary misremembered her own dream. But there is a third, more disturbing possibility. When I interviewed the Davis family in Indianapolis and inquired about any odd fears or phobias any of them might recall, Laura told me that she was always and had always had an intense fear of attic spaces as she remembered them from her youth. Her own terror about it is such that she insisted her husband nail shut the ceiling trapdoor leading to the attic crawl space in both the houses they have lived in since their marriage. Despite this deep-seated and unusual fear, Laura claims to remember nothing of a childhood attic experience, while Kathy recalls the dream of hiding with her mother in this same closet. And so, considering the recollections of all three, a third possibility presents itself. Could there have been two separate invasions of the house, years apart, with Mary reacting the same way both times, by trying to hide her littlest child in a closet from intruders? Not until our third phone conversation did I ask Kathy if she herself had ever seen anything she took to be an actual UFO, an unidentified flying object, as opposed to the odd light in the pool shed or two strange figures in her dream. She answered somewhat hesitantly that she and two other girls, teenagers, had several times seen odd moving lights late at night when they were driving around. In Kathy's phrase, out in the boonies. I asked for details. My friend Dorothy and I sometimes cruised around spying on Dorothy's boyfriend. We always seemed to have a good time, but we don't remember what we did. One time, I remember we saw this weird light. It was flashing like a strobe. Again, I direct you to Ezekiel. I said, hey, look at that light up there. And then somebody said, it's a UFO. And we all started giggling. But then it got closer, continuing to flash. We all got a very creepy feeling. I was more fascinated than I was scared. I remember that we stopped the car to look at it. Kathy's memories at this point became vague, so I made a note to inquire further into this incident. I asked her to visit her friend Dorothy and find out what she remembered about that night. And the next day, Kathy called me. I was really surprised, she said, when I got Dorothy on the phone. I told her you wanted to know about what she remembered about the time we saw the flashing light and stopped the car. She said, do you mean the light in the sky or the light on the ground that we got out to look at? Now, the strange thing is, I don't remember seeing any light on the ground. I barely remember getting out of the car. I don't remember anything else at all, except that Roberta was hiding on the floor in the back seat, scared to death and wanting to go home. The whole thing is confusion. I remember that I spent the night at Dorothy's and that we had barely gotten in bed when her parents' alarm clock went off and it was time for them to get up. I know it was almost dawn when we came in, but I can't for the life of me remember what we did all that time. Dorothy doesn't know what we did either, but she remembers how late it was. And then Kathy, recognizing the irony of the situation, chuckled and said, I remember one of us saying, time really flies when you're having fun. As the reader will learn, Kathy's conscious recollections of that night concealed a harrowing UFO abduction experience, an event of crucial importance of our understanding of the UFO phenomenon. Well, I could go on reading that book, but we must stop there. I highly recommend you get the book, Intruders, by Bud Hopkins. Is this family crazy? Is the Davis family crazy? Some sort of psychological craziness that they are projecting onto UFO? Some type of strange dysfunction that is easier to deal with by making up a UFO than it is to looking in the mirror? Is the family crazy? Is the family seeking fame? A cheap publicity? Is the family being harassed by beings who that have traveled billions of space miles for no other reason than to be the fodder for X-Files shows? I don't think so. Or is the family being haunted, directly moved upon by a force of dimensional beings growing ever more brazen as the end draws near? I'll leave you to read the story and you to draw your conclusions from The Intruders at Copley Woods.